everyone, and welcome back to the Glam Observer podcast. I'm Jada, founder and CEO of the first fashion career advice platform, Glam Observer, a fashion career coach, best-selling author, Forbes Under 30, and in this podcast, I will share actionable tips, tricks, and behind-the-scenes secrets of the fashion industry. If you're an ambitious fashion enthusiast looking to start a career in this industry, you are in the right place. Lucy McGuire is the trends editor at Vogue Business. She started her career in fashion by interning at Roxanda, to then landing at Condé Nast as features intern and becoming Susie Menke's assistant after 1 month. After 2 years at Vogue International, she started her journey at Vogue Business as editorial assistant, up to becoming today's trends editor of the business fashion publication. In this episode, we chat about her career from the beginning, what she learned by working with a fashion industry icon such as Susie Menke, and her advice on how to get a similar opportunity. Before covering industry trends, Lucy worked in the production team, and she shares how this experience was useful to getting her current job and how she has started writing more and more, proving she could do so. We also talked about how she comes up with fashion industry analysis and articles today, and how she started doing so, how at Vogue they hire for potential rather than a finished product, and how the fashion industry is more and more democratized, and how trends are coming beyond the runway. Before starting this episode, I just wanted to quickly invite you to my free masterclass, where I share my top 3 tips to triple your chances to get a job in fashion. In this 1 hour masterclass, I will show you what are the false myths and misconceptions related to the fashion industry that might stop you to take action, and also what are the most common mistakes when applying for jobs in fashion, and I will also share these 3 strategies with you. If you want to register to this free masterclass, I will leave you the link in the notes of this podcast episode. Hello, Lucy, and welcome to the Glam Observer podcast. As usual, I would like to start with a little bit of your background. So let's start with what you study and what was your dream job back when you were in school?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me, first of all. When I was back at school, my dream job, I actually always wanted to be a fashion journalist, which sounds a bit cheesy, but it's true. I never expected to be a fashion business journalist, though, so that kind of changed course a little bit, but I guess we'll go into that a bit later. I didn't study journalism-related subjects at university. I actually went to UCL, and I did a course called Arts and Sciences. So it's kind of a mixture. It's a bit like the American system, where you can major and minor. And so I majored in cultures, which featured like French, Russian, and bits of English literature. And then my minor was actually biology, so pretty far from fashion. But I interned all throughout uni, and the languages have really helped actually in the long run. So I'm still glad I did that course, really.
Yeah. And I wanted also to chat about this because it's really important to discuss this theme. You know, many fashion enthusiasts who want to enter the industry believe that it's necessary to study something related to fashion to work in this industry. But like you and many other successful people who work in the industry today, prove that this is not true, and that actually internships are more important than what you've studied, because regardless you studied something related to fashion or not, you have to start from internships. So you interned a lot. I spied your LinkedIn profile, so I see that you did many internships, and I always recommend to do them a lot. And what I've noticed is that despite I usually suggest to, you know, use internship because they're your ticket to the fashion industry, I often get emails from people and they say, I did like a 1 month internship. Now I would like to get a full-time job. But, you know, it takes more than 1 month internship to get a full-time job. So how long did you intern before getting your full-time job?
Yeah, so I started interning when I was 18, so I moved to Paris before I went to UCL. I lived in Paris for a year. I studied there for a year, but I was an au pair at the same time with a French family. And I was learning more French off the kids that I was looking after than I was learning at university. So I decided to switch and go to UCL after that. But yeah, so I started interning in Paris. I interned for Roxander in her showroom. Back then, Roxander was a much smaller brand, so they shared a showroom with Jonathan Saunders. But I only ever did, you know, during uni holidays, it'd be 1 to 2 weeks at a time. But I did that from being 18 until I graduated when I was 22. And then once I'd graduated, I did 1 month with British Vogue. They used to do, well, it was 3 weeks, actually. They used to do a sort of work shadowing placement. And It was from then that I was already in Condé Nast, and I applied for a 6 month paid internship with Susie Menkes. And then I basically never left Condé Nast since then. But, you know, it was a lot of internships before that, and not even just fashion internships either. You know, I was at House and Garden, which was my first internship at Condé Nast. And in the British Vogue interview, I remember Fran Bentley, who was the managing editor at the time, saying, oh, you've already worked at Condé Nast before. So even though that wasn't fashion related, you know, that still worked as well. It was about spreading it and making sure I had experience in all these different areas of the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also see that you interned at Facebook, right?
Yeah, that was it. So my cousin is a set designer, and one summer during university, I think it was the end of my first year, she was working on these adverts in Facebook headquarters. It was a collaboration between Facebook and McDonald's. So we used to go in overnight, and they'd created a whole stadium out of McDonald's chips made out of resin, and we had to dress them up like they were players and supporters. Yes, that was fun. Totally random, but, you know, still, like, working in the tech world like that, you learn a lot as well, and it shows that it just shows you've got the drive to do that kind of thing, like overnight, really grueling shoots, you know?
Yeah. And I also think it's fine if you can, you know, have experience also in other fields, especially if it is something so related to fashion, like technology, that now are very connected. We see often that the fashion industry hires from tech companies and the other way around happens. And I also like the fact that you said that you interned when basically you were 18 until you graduated. So you interned while you studied. And this is really important for people want to accelerate their career, because if you can, you know, anticipate the internships to when you're still in school, it means that you can get a full-time job as soon as you graduate. Mm. So how did you manage your internships while you were studying?
Yeah, it can be quite difficult. The most challenging time I found was I'd intern quite a lot at Easter, and obviously that was coming into exam time. So it would be, you know, it was hard. It'd be interning all day and then studying, not all night, but for a lot of the evening, or, you know, studying in my lunch breaks. And it is quite a balancing act. But I think if you can avoid interning during that Easter holiday when your exams are coming up, that's probably wise. And instead focus on the summer, focus on September, because, you know, a lot of universities don't start until late September, early October, whereas fashion weeks, unless you're in Paris, it's a bit more difficult, but fashion weeks are September, early September. So, you know, that's a really good time before the term even starts, before you have to worry about academic deadlines, to get some experience under your belt.
Yeah, and I also think are useful to find, I mean, maybe part-time internships, you know, can be more, you know, you can manage them better with, you know, when you're studying, or even just interning during fashion week, like you were mentioning, is sort of short experiences, but they can help you build your resume, but also you start your foot in the door, and also you know, start meeting people and build the connections, which is really important in this industry. So can you walk us through your career process, so from your internships to your current role at Vogue?
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned before, I did 3 weeks at British Vogue on the fashion features desk. And then I applied for a job with Susie Menkes from there. So that was a 6 month paid internship. And actually, you know, speaking of discussing what we were talking about before, I actually think I got that internship because I speak French. So, you know, thinking about things that you can study that are outside of maybe fashion or outside of journalism, Susie needed somebody who could listen to her interview designers in French and transcribe and translate it. So I worked with Susie. It ended up being 9 months instead of six. And that was a great experience. It was a lot of transcribing, a lot of scheduling for Fashion Week. And then from there, actually, very strangely, in my health and safety induction at Condé Nast, I met the then managing editor of Vogue International. And Vogue International, it's now called the Vogue Global Network, but it's kind of a central content hub that produces digital content for all the Vogues around the world. and then they translate it and send it out. So they'll do things like big interviews, big designer interviews, rather than, you know, 16 journalists doing the same thing. They do it once and then translate. And so I'd met the managing editor for Vogue International, then called. And when I was coming to the anime internship with Susie, I just sent her an email and I said, you know, it was great to meet you on that day. I just would love to have a coffee and talk about what the department's up to. And so I met with her and it turned out that there was actually a job coming up in the fashion shows team. Now, I knew that I wanted to write from the outset, but I also knew that writing jobs, and especially junior writing jobs at Vogue, don't really come up very often. So I kind of adopted the policy of being in the right company, even if I maybe wasn't in the exact right job. So I joined the fashion shows team, and that was a lot of production. It was a lot of organizing photographers to shoot shows and processing images for Vogue Runway. And then I worked there for about a year and a half in that role. But during that time, I started to do bits of writing as well for Vogue International. And it was amazing because I was doing production day to day, but then sometimes my work would be on British Vogue or Vogue Paris or Vogue Russia. And that was how I proved that I could write. And then I applied for an editorial assistant job at Vogue Business. And Lauren Indvik, who was the editor-in-chief at the time, she'd worked with me a little bit on Vogue International before. And so, yeah, I joined Vogue Business as editorial assistant. And then a few months went by and I wrote a lot and was writing more and more, and they wanted me to keep writing and do a little bit less production. So then I was promoted to editorial associate. And then I wrote more and more and more. And then, yeah, they made me trends editor in October. So, yeah, it's been, I think it's in total, I first joined Condé Nast in July 2017. And now, what are we, January 2021. So, yeah, it's been
almost 4 years.
Yeah, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, yeah. And I also think there's very interesting for people who want to, you know, work at fashion magazine and write for the magazine to understand that maybe they could also, for example, not start directly working and writing for the publication, but also when you start with the internships and assistant position, you might be helping editors or stylists or in production, and then you will be, you know, get to the point when you can also start writing. So it's useful for the fashion enthusiasts who want to start their career at fashion magazines to know that even though in the beginning they're not going to write for the publication, this is how it works. So you're on the right path and you will soon start writing something, and so write more and more.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask about your experience with Susie Menkes, because of course she's one of the top voices of the industry. So I wanted to ask you, what have you learned the most by working with her?
Yeah, it was an amazing experience working with Susie. I think listening to her interviews was so interesting because she really had a way of pulling the most interesting points out of a story and really finding the hook of a story. And so, you know, she'd be in these long conversations, and at first you'd kind of be thinking, oh, why is she asking that? That question seems a bit, it's not the same question that everybody else is asking. Like, why is she focusing in on that particular side to the story? But then by the end of the interview, you see that she's weaved together a really amazing narrative. And she's like understood, she's interpreted the designer's work, for example, in a slightly different way to everybody else. And so her interview skills it was amazing to listen to that. Particularly listening to her interview Karl Lagerfeld, those conversations were always like extremely exciting. And also, you know, Susie actually, despite the fact, you know, she's been in the industry for a long time, she really values like more modern mediums. So she loves Instagram as a communication tool, and the way that she can keep up with her Instagram like puts most most young people to shame. And I think the growth on her Instagram is crazy, just because she was giving people that front row seat, but it was really raw. It wasn't like polished and edited. She's just very much herself, and you know, sometimes the photos are grainy and it's not like the best quality, but you know that she's right there in the action, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. And for someone who wants to work with a very, you know, influential person in the fashion industry, what would be your advice to get that kind of opportunity?
Yeah, it is difficult. I think with Susie, it kind of happened quite organically because I was already across the road at British Vogue and I just applied online. I had to apply online like everybody else, but then I was recommended by and the people I was working with at British Vogue at the time. I think, you know, if there's a certain individual that you do really want to work with, there's nothing to stop you reaching out or reaching out to the team and expressing an interest. And maybe initially that would be an interest in just shadowing them for a couple of weeks. I think more so than ever at the moment, people are open to mentoring. So, you know, it might even be that this person could be a mentor to start with. And then if a position comes up in their team, then they would take you on. Because with, I think it's quite rare that with high profile people, the job would be advertised publicly. But you should, you know, you can still reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think that especially nowadays with Instagram or everything that we have available, I always suggest to not just wait for the jobs or internship to just get published online and apply, but you can reach out to people, you can reach out to the editors, the stylists, whoever you want to work with, introduce yourself, send a cold email. You never know if someone needs help in that moment, or maybe they might need help in 2 weeks, they might remind your email, so they can also use your application for future opportunities. So I think now the standard application path alone doesn't work anymore. It's all about using really unconventional strategies, not just to stand out, because fashion is always every single day more and more competitive, but also because I feel like people now expect a lot from the other, you know, all the candidates. They don't just look just a resume, they want to see something that goes beyond the standard application, because now I think we all have a degree, we all have masters, so they want to, I think they're looking for something else. I don't know if you can confirm when hiring in your team, in your department, what do you look for in people, in interns or young people want to join the team?
Yeah, and I think it's true what you say about, you know, most people have a degree and most people have a master's, but I know that's something we've been talking about quite a lot in our team more recently, is this idea of hiring for potential rather than always like looking for a finished product. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a master's from the most prestigious fashion university in the world. Like it helps, and that's great if you do. But I think that, you know, at the moment there's more of an onus on hiring people who persevere, who are tenacious, who show their potential, are enthusiastic, good to be around. You know, those are qualities as well that are really important, and obviously, you know, education is really important, but I think it's more what you do with it and how you behave around people and how you present your work. I think it's more of a package, you know, and yeah. I think we're definitely not solely basing how I'm not a hiring manager, so I can't fully speak for us, but I know that generally, you know, we're really looking for just people with potential that maybe need some work and need to hone their skills, but they can do so with us, so they don't have to come to us having done that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So you started at Vogue Business as an editorial assistant, and now you are the trends editor. So what would be your advice to, you know, get a promotion in within the same company, and so you uplift your career?
Yeah, I mean it depends on the kind of role that you're doing, but with me it was the fact that I was gradually becoming more valuable as a writer than I was as essentially a production assistant. But, you know, it was being a yes person as well. I think there's always those moments at work where an opportunity arises and you have that split second where you think, this potentially could fail, and then I could look really stupid, or I could say yes to this, and if I pull it off, then it'll be amazing for my career. And I think, you know, whether that's an editor saying, oh, like we've got this news story come in, like this has just happened, can you cover it? And when you say yes to that, it means that you have to spend your whole day on the phone, probably being ignored, trying to get the scoop, trying to speak to as many people. And sometimes the story comes off amazing and you're really proud of it at the end of the day. Sometimes you end up staying up most of the night to get it done because you've not managed to speak to all the analysts you want to speak to. But I think it's just like saying yes first and then figuring it out after. Yeah. Within the realms, you know, don't say yes if you know you can't do it, but if you think there's, and with we have a new editorial director now, she joined us last year, but you know, I've always been really open about what my ambitions are, because if people don't know, they can't help you towards them. So I've always said, you know, I want to write more, I want to take the next step, I want to do less production. And if people know that, then they can help you achieve that goal over time, and they can set you objectives, and then once you meet those, then it makes sense, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't ask, you don't get.
Literally. Yeah, exactly. You put it much more succinctly than I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I wanted to ask more about your role at Vogue Business. You are the trends editor, but you don't, I mean, for trends, for you are not style trends, you know, talk about more about the industry and the business side. So I wanted to ask you, how have you learned to analyze the industry and how do you come up with industry analysis and articles?
Yeah, I think there's a real array of ways that I come up with story ideas. So it can be as simple as like scrolling on Instagram or TikTok and seeing that a brand has done something that's interesting. Or seeing that I'm looking at a few different types of videos on TikTok and, you know, it seems like fashion brands are really getting into a certain type of content. Or it can be that, you know, sometimes people reach out to me and they'll say, oh, like we're a company that does this and we've been working on this with these luxury brands. And basically at any time that luxury starts to do something new, so whether that's luxury brands, like I've said, joining TikTok, or whether that's luxury brands working with footballer players more often, or whether it's young people seeming to make their own clothes more on and sell them on Depop. I'm just looking for when things change and when people are getting on board with things and how that can interact with the luxury fashion industry. Because at the end of the day, you know, even things like, I did an article over the summer about young people at Gen Z making their own clothes. And that in the first instance might not seem like it has anything to do with like Louis Vuitton or Dior or any of the other luxury brands. But actually, like, that's the kind of thing that those brands need to know about, because, you know, as we think about upcycling and dead stock and things like that, those brands could sell their dead stock for young people to make their own clothes with. And that's like an area of opportunity. So it's just thinking about, you know, how, what new things are coming around and how they intersect with luxury houses.
And for someone who wants to, you know, start a fashion journalist career, but more right about the business side of the industry, like you do, how they can, you know, develop these, you know, high to spot really and talk about what is happening in the industry, like talking about numbers, revenues. So how they can become more analytical and, you know, analyze really what is happening behind the scenes of the industry.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is who you talk to as well. You know, when I came to Vogue Business, the only people that I'd interviewed up to that point were designers, very occasionally influencers. That was, I had kind of a one-dimensional view of the industry. And it was only at Vogue Business, and actually I started to speak to, whether it's politicians, analysts, marketing experts, you know, people from the C-suite of companies, as well as the creative directors. And I've learned a lot from having conversations with them. And then in terms of financial journalism, it's not easy when you first start, but there's definitely a sort of formula to it. And so when luxury houses or other apparel companies come out with their financial reports, this can happen either once a quarter or like once every 6 months, as you know, have a look at them, have a look at the top lines. And the way that I learned was having a look at that and then seeing the way that our journalists and other journalists reported on it. And you can see from the, you know, at first the numbers look like impenetrable tables, but if you actually see what, you know, publications like Bloomberg have pulled out of it and found interesting, then you can kind of figure out how to interpret them going forward. But it's definitely worth keep reading them, because I just kept reading them until I understood what these companies are trying to say with it. Because I admit, yeah, the financial side is tough.
Yeah. I think the more you're used to read websites such as Vogue Business, the New York Times, Financial Times, and all these magazines that you might think they're not, you know, fashion related because they're more on the financial or business side, but they do also cover fashion companies. And this is how you're going to start seeing how other journalists, you know, talk about the themes, and you can start, you know, being, and the more you read these things, the more you get familiar with all this number of things, the more I think you can then write about this thing if this is what you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think as well, you know, understanding that stuff, even if you don't want to do fashion business journalism per se, understanding that stuff just ultimately helps you understand the industry better and the way that it works.
Yeah.
And then vice versa, you know, I read a lot of non-business fashion journalism because that informs my work as well. And it, you know, I think that no matter which side of the industry you work on, you can be informed by the other.
Absolutely, absolutely. So because you're a trends editor, I wanted to ask you if you have, you know, if you can tell us about some future trends of the industry.
As always, you know, I report a lot on young people and the way that they're consuming fashion and absorbing content. And what we're seeing at the moment is a huge democratization of fashion. And so that's, you know, it's been accelerated by the pandemic, because now we can all sit and watch the Fendi Couture show that just happened, or we can all sit and watch the Chanel show. Whereas before, you know, we could see social media accounts, but for high quality, like not a lot of these shows were streamed like that. And that trickles down to social media as well. You know, the way that we consume and create content has become more, less polished, and platforms like live streaming platforms, gaming platforms, TikTok are proliferating, and people are, you know, creating their own videos, and it doesn't matter how many followers you've got. You can interact with fashion, you can create a fashion video and it can go viral overnight. So the way that like trends are even happening has completely changed, and that's its own trend, if that makes sense. You know, the trend funnel is no longer the runway, then to magazines, then to the high street and like back around. It's completely dismantled. And so a trend can appear on from a Depop seller. Or a trend can appear, it can still appear from the runway, but it appears in a film. So millions of people see it rather than there being 1,000 people in the room. And so, yeah, that, I think that's the biggest shift that we've seen. Like fashion is really democratized now, and I'm not sure that it'll ever go back to the way that it was before. And I think that brands are going to have to increasingly start paying attention to trends that appear beyond the runway. You know, I don't think that WGSN are going to tell them 2 years prior like what's going to happen anymore, because things like cottagecore can just happen out of nowhere overnight because people are at home and they want to pursue rural activities, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think has changed the most before and now after the pandemic? Because, you know, we always now hear often the word sustainability, diversity and inclusion, but these were teams that were already, you know, something even before the pandemic, but it seems like now more people are conscious. It was like it had become a trend to talk about this thing. So what do you see, what have you seen the most during the pandemic that has changed a lot in the fashion industry?
I think, I don't know necessarily if it's that things have changed or there's been a new wave of things. It's more that changes that were already coming have been completely accelerated. So as you mentioned, diversity and inclusion, that was something that was on the radar of many fashion companies and media outlets, et cetera. But then after the Black Lives Matter movement accelerated last year, brands really started to understand that they had to take action, and they had to take action in a meaningful way in that present moment without being tokenistic, without being shallow about it, without it being a marketing ploy. And that's something, you know, I've seen that continue to improve. And even in our own organization, even at Vogue Business, we've been working really hard to make this industry for everyone and improve the level of like different perspectives that we have on our team. And I think that I've seen that across the industry from brands. In terms of sustainability, I think that, you know, it's still very much on the agenda and it's still growing across the industry. I think that the pandemic sort of shifted the focus a little bit. And it's important that brands stay on track. It's definitely slowed down consumption in a lot of areas. But I think there's still a long way to go there. And hopefully now that, you know, America's back in the climate agreement, and now that we've had a lot of time to reflect over this pandemic, that brands can continue to push this forward too.
Yeah. And I also think it's really interesting that now also luxury brands are reconsidering like secondhand among their strategies. How do you think this is going to develop secondhand and luxury? Because I think LVMH in December announced that they're working towards something related to secondhand, while Gucci, for example, collaborated with The Real Real to, you know, manage secondhand. So what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think the secondhand and the resale space is extremely interesting. And, you know, there's so many platforms, whether that's StockX or The Real Real, as you said, or even I've mentioned a few times that even Depop, these resale platforms, particularly during the pandemic, have done extremely well. And that's, you know, for a few reasons. One of them is people have been cleaning out their closets because they've had a lot of free time. Another is that people are finding community on these platforms. You know, they're not buying from a big corporation. They're actually buying an item that was made by a big corporation, but they're buying it from an individual with a story. or they're, you know, they're buying it and they know that it's pre-loved and they're not using resources to make it. They're actually like doing their bit for the environment whilst also getting clothes that they enjoy. And, you know, I sort of agree that maybe this detracts away from the old idea of luxury, but also, you know, luxury goods more than any other goods are supposed to last a lifetime and they're supposed to be really high quality, really hard wearing. So actually resale lends itself really well to these goods. And like repairability as well, you know, there's nothing more luxurious. And in fact, American Vogue published an article about this a couple of weeks ago. I think it was Luke Leach that wrote it. And he was saying, you know, there's nothing more luxury than repairability because, you know, suppose that an item has been so well made that you can just keep repairing it, patching it up, or maybe never even have to repair it at all. And I think LVMH doing it is a great step.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. As you said, this is like the real essence of being a luxury item, that you can wear it again and again. Let's think about a Birkin bag. You can have it forever, basically. So yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how LVMH or the other luxury brands are going to go towards the secondhand strategy. So my last question is, what is your career advice for those who want to start a career in the fashion industry?
So we've touched on this a little bit already, but intern. I think, but also intern, if you can and if you are studying, intern while you're studying, because it can place a lot of financial burden on you. You know, internships are still not always paid. And even if they are, it's still quite difficult, some of the salaries that you get placed on. So if you do it while you're studying, then you're kind of taking that factor away. And, you know, at the moment, I know that it's been quite difficult for people, but try for remote internships as well. I mean, we just launched the Vogue Business Talent Competition and the first prize of that is a 1 month remote internship with us. So that's great because it means it's accessible for everyone. It's for UK based people at the moment. But yeah, so, you know, still scope it out, even though people are stuck at home. Like, I'm sure that brands still need help. And publications maybe still need help too. So just try and get experience wherever you can. And if that doesn't work, if you can't find anything, then just reach out to people for advice, for mentorship, one-on-one. Like I said before, I think people are really receptive to that at the moment. I know I certainly am, so.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think asking for information or interviews, just, you know, you think long-term. So even if in that moment they don't have anything available, you still establish a relationship with these people. And in the long term, they might remind about you, what you asked them 1 month ago, and they might have offered you an internship or a job. And regarding remote working, especially I think when it comes to fashion publication, I think it's the most manageable one when it comes to writing articles, despite all the other jobs.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And, you know, as well on that, what you were just saying about being in the front of mind almost, I think, you know, if we were to advertise a job, for example, if a Condé Nast publication was to advertise a job, it takes so much resource to go through hundreds and hundreds of applications, and sometimes it's hundreds. Whereas, you know, for an internship, if you can be front of mind, and even if somebody was currently in an internship at the moment, we don't actually have an internship scheme currently at Condé Nast, but, you know, at other publications, I've definitely done it this way, where, or at brands, where you are front of mind then. So if they need help for a week or a couple of weeks or even at a 1 day event, it's so much easier than advertising it because they've already had a conversation with you and they can just reach out.
Yeah,
so
it's great. Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I want to add and suggest to those who are listening is that you can reach out to people even if you don't know them. I mean, even if you now today you have zero connections in the industry, you can start building your connections through LinkedIn, through Instagram. Now all the editors basically are on Instagram. You can send them a direct message. This is how I reach out to you basically. You can find on the Instagram profile their email address and send them an email. Just start this conversation. You can just simply very ask about their job. You can start the conversation saying that you admire their career and that you are new in the industry. You just want to learn more about the industry. So don't ask for a job straight away in the first approach with someone. But I think if you think long term, meaningful relationships are those that are going to build you career opportunities. So you always have to build genuine relationships, because if you reach out to someone and ask for a job, that's a cold email. It's a self-application. It's not networking. So I always say that a cold application is like a short-term strategy. Networking is a long-term strategy. So why both they might have the end goal of getting you a job, they have a different approach. Yeah, I think you should use a combination of both. So both networking and also asking to someone else straight for a job opportunity.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that for sure.
Okay, so thank you so much for joining me on the Glam Observer podcast for this very great conversation. It was such a pleasure for me to speak to you today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I really hope you enjoyed this new episode of the Glam Observer podcast. If so, please leave a review and subscribe. Bye for now.